Radio. He is now the executive vice president of football operations of the USFL, of course, member of the Cowboys in that great dynasty in the 90s. And Daryl Johnston joins us on Sikkim 365 Radio and 365 Sports. Daryl, thank you as always. Paul Craig, David Smoke. We just had Tim Brando on. He said hello, and he said he is stoked about the USFL launching and getting themselves back.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Always great to visit with Tim.
Daryl, what is this like for you? You have been a part of leagues that have tried, and then this one seems to have some roots that are digging and moving forward, and the excitement of being a part of something new like this.
Yeah, I think it was just, you know, it was unusual circumstances. The other two go-arounds, you know, one that was kind of within our control, a little bit with the Alliance, you know, not having, you know, somebody that was really committed to funding and being that individual angel investor moving forward. And then when we changed paths, you know, I think at that time there was a lot of question as to the responsibility of some of the accounts. Once things switched hands and we just really couldn't reach any point of conclusion as to how we should move forward. So with the Alliance, you know, that was a tough one because I thought Charlie and Bill Polian did a great job. And all the guys that we've talked to and seen since that time still look back on those days very fondly. A lot of them will tell us it's the most fun they've had playing football since they were in high school. And that's what we're hoping to do with all these leagues. The XFL, the pandemic got us. You know, I think that Vince McMahon, if you really kind of look at what happened to him during that time, you know, the hit that the WWE took on its stock price, you know, his net worth, you know, dropped considerably during that whole process. And he was the singer payer of all the expenses. So it was a little bit too much. And what could we do moving forward? You know, do you pause and hold on, or do you just hold your tent and try again later on? So, you know, they'll be coming online next year and we look forward to competing against them. But I think you make a great point. I think there's so much history with the USFL and so many people remember it fondly, that this has already got some roots that we can use to our advantage. And that's going to be one of the great things. You know, some of the players that were there, I think people forget that that's Reggie White and Jim Kelly and Herschel Walker and Steve Young and Mike Rozier and Irv Eatman. I mean, it's amazing. You know, Nate Newton was a part of the USFL mm-hmm. first go around. So we've stayed traditional with the uniforms. We've modernized them a little bit with colors, but we haven't changed a whole lot. So we're really excited about it. We're really excited to launch this. And, you know, just talking to some people, you know, I had an opportunity to visit with Vince Papale and he was a part of the Philadelphia Stars. They still have a reunion every year. So we're going to try and tap into that during the course of the season, get a watch party going back at one of the places they do that back in Philadelphia. And hopefully we'll get groups coming down to Birmingham, Alabama to watch the teams that they remember from back in the 80s.
Daryl, how much did you guys go back into the USFL's history and make sure you learned from what the mistakes were made early on? With the, you know, they expanded way too fast and got really way out over their skis. And a lot of things I know you guys aren't going to do, but just kind of some of the little things that happened in the USFL that led to the screws getting loose and ultimately it falling apart.
Well, I think the big thing is you know, you can't take on the NFL, not even at that time. You know, we're talking 40 years removed now, but that, I mean, the NFL at that time was still, you know, kind of a powerhouse and it was the standard in professional football. And, you know, it's visionary, and it's bold, you know, to try and take them on and compete with them. But I just think the way they started out where they had the offset calendar was the best option for them. You know, build it in that time frame. You know, continue to build your fan base. Cause as we just talked about, there's a lot of people that love the USFL. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do. Nobody's going to be able to go head to head with the NFL. It's just not going to happen. But you also don't want to feel like you're a developmental league for them. You know, you have to find that sweet spot where, you know, we're not competing with the NFL. We're working with them, but we're not developing players for their sole sake. The way that I do it is I'm doing it for the individual players. You know, I'm trying to get them in a position where we can work on their craft and get them around great coaches and great teachers and whatever it is that they're missing, whatever it is that's preventing them from getting to the NFL, we're going to be able to help them, you know, fix that, you know, get used to being in a professional organization, get used to the verbiage, get used to the day in, day out. you know, for the offensive linemen, for the quarterbacks, get some quality game reps in there. And then when they come off the backside, you know, our calendar is still, it's still NFL training camp friendly, especially the way camps are held today. You're not as physical. You're starting a little bit later in the month of July, sometimes even in August. You've got an acclimation period. So if you win the championship game in the USFL, you will have played on July 2nd. And that still gives those guys plenty of time to kind of heal up a little bit. They're going to be in football shape. I think they're going to be ahead of the curve going in. I think they're going to be, the individual players that kind of pop at the beginning of practice.
Daryl, you guys have 8 teams, Michigan, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Birmingham, Houston, New Orleans, and Tampa Bay, but you're this first season going to play all of these games in Birmingham, 2 different sites, and I saw where I know the hope is to eventually expand and where teams will play at their own home sites, but can you talk about the decision to go into that and just the market that is Birmingham, Alabama, and their love for football?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. We were down in Birmingham last Monday and Tuesday, and the one thing I learned right away is it's the state of Alabama, it's not Alabama. The passion for the game of football, the way that the city has embraced and really not just embraced, but kind of pursued the opportunity to be, you know, a high quality, high caliber sports town. In Birmingham, Alabama. You know, Prospective Stadium is beautiful. The seating capacity is perfect for us. It's the home field for UAB. We think it's going to be a great home for all of our teams there. We will be at Legion Field from time to time. I think we're scheduled to play 8 to 12 games at Legion. But the real home base is going to be Prospective, and it's a beautiful stadium. That whole area around the stadium is really kind of turned around. It's perfect for what we're trying to do. There's a World Games there right after our season ends. So, you know, the city of Birmingham has already, you know, landed, you know, a professional sports league as the host city, you know, for a time. And then they've also encouraged and found a way to get the World Games there. So they're already well down the path to becoming that kind of sports destination. And I'm excited to see, you know, what they do moving forward. You know, everybody we met there, was excited. You know, they talked about the challenges and how everybody kind of came together for the good of the city, for the good of the state of Alabama, for this opportunity. So we're really excited. We're really excited to be able to bring this product down there to the city of Birmingham.
And Daryl, there's no question, you know, the Big 12 had to change because of Texas and Oklahoma and eventually whenever they leave for the SEC. And so they've added new teams. And there's no question Memphis in that area. I mean, it's football crazy, as Craig mentioned. And Birmingham and UAB and the love of football in the South is that makes it the perfect place to start.
Absolutely. It was one of those things. We played Auburn in the Sugar Bowl my junior year of college, and it was one of the things that we heard all week. Is you boys from up north don't know how to play football down here in the South. You know, and we use that as personal motivation for us. There's the history of these great programs in the South, the conferences, the individual players, the coaches. I mean, it really is a religion, you know, whether it's College Saturday or Pro Sunday, but especially, you know, that college football, you know, the high school football scene in the South is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So, you know, we couldn't really have landed in a better place to launch this. So we really look forward to a really, really positive relationship with not only, you know, the city of Birmingham, but really becoming a part of that community down there. We've already got some things in place, you know, kind of plant some seeds there, and hopefully we'll continue to grow those through year number one.
What have you learned from the previous experiences? Paul mentioned that some of them grow too fast or that the things go. Your thoughts about, and your name, there's no question. I'm not saying this because you're on with us. I've known you for a long time. Your name attached to this doesn't hurt either, does it?
Hopefully it doesn't. I hope I've learned from the first two. You know, we talked about the circumstances surrounding both of them, but there were some things within our control that contributed to that. And I think the first one is getting out over your skis, like you guys said, and being a little bit aggressive financially year one. That's why I like, you know, what we're doing with the USFL here in year one, doing the hub concept, eliminating all those travel costs, not having the 8 individual franchises across the United States. You know, travel was one of the hardest things to navigate, you know, as we started out. So we've taken that right away. So I think that's a huge plus. You just minimize all your expenses when you're doing the hub concept. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we saw from,
what happened during the pandemic when the WNBA and the NBA and the MLS went down to Florida and they did the bubble concept. You know, we're similar to that, but we're not a bubble. We're a hub. And everything's just going to come out of Birmingham. And, you know, I think it's going to give us a great opportunity to get off that first year on a sound footing, you know, work through the other logistical things that we have to learn and have to get better at during the course of the year without really putting a huge hit on our finances. So hopefully year two, you know, we turn the corner, we get to year two, which is something that I'm really, really excited to accomplish, because the other two times we never got to learn from our mistakes in year one and advance and grow and get better in year two. And that's one of the things I'm really hoping to do this time around. I know we're going to be good in year one, and I want to be really good in year two and then great in year three.
Daryl, you see now who's in the Super Bowl. You spent part of your life in that with the dynasty of the Cowboys. Your thoughts about what it takes, and yes, talent, great quarterback play, this and that, some luck along the way. Your thoughts about what we have with Cincinnati and what they've done, and the Rams, they've built it differently because they've gone to where they've gone out and grabbed stars.
Yeah, kind of two different models, right? You know, Cincinnati has taken that traditional path of bringing in a new coach and acquiring the players and the talent, you know, that fit his system and gradually grow. And from 2-14 to 4-12 to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. We had them week one. So, you know, we were very familiar with what had transpired in the offseason, and Cincinnati committed to the defense. They spent $100 million in contracts on the defensive side of the ball. Trey Hendrickson, obviously probably your biggest signing that was there. You know, that was the Russian that came in from New Orleans, but just a, you know, quality guy throughout that defensive front. And Lou Anarumo, what he was able to do against Kansas City in the second half of that game on Sunday was absolutely amazing. The defensive coordinator made some great adjustments at halftime. And you're adjusting through that whole first half, trying to slow them down a little bit, which they did, but they really kind of locked in that second half. So you've got the traditional way of building it, the way that Cincinnati has. They've got what many consider to be, you know, a definite franchise quarterback running that show right now. And you know, that was one of the things that I took away that week one experience in Cincinnati is Joe Burrow's got a lot of swagger to him. He reminded me of Troy. And I know people are going to say, you know, that, you know, that's crazy. And I'm not saying he is Troy, but that it thing, the thing that you can't really coach, that really has to be kind of a part of your personality. You could see Joe, you know, very calculated with his responses. You know, you could tell that he was going to hold people accountable the way he controlled practice. It was really impressive to see a young guy coming off a major injury, you know, still have that confidence and swagger. And I think we've seen it come out a number of times during the course of the year. And then you've got the Rams. I mean, I was really nervous for them, you know, the midpoint of the year when they just decided, you know, hey, we're going after this. You know, they'd already brought in Matthew Stafford. You know, during the course of the season, they bring in Odell Beckham, they bring in Von Miller. You know, it's amazing. You know, what they've really rolled the dice with here. When you talk about what is your future going to be, because they've lost all their draft picks. I think it's 2024 before they have a first round draft pick. Yep. Maybe longer than that.
It's ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so you are all in at this point. And if it blows up, which it looked like it was going to when it's 17-7 San Francisco, you know, you've leveraged your future for a one-shot deal to be able to play in your home stadium at the Super Bowl. And that almost slipped through your fingers. So I give them a lot of credit for you know, being gutsy and making that call and committing to it and, you know, getting everybody on board. So, you know, it was an impressive win, and I'm really, really happy for Matthew Stafford to have the opportunity, you know, to finally at this stage of his career get that Super Bowl experience.
Daryl, final thing for you. The Cowboys are going to be home watching once again. I mean, they got to the playoffs. We all saw that. Jerry's tried to do the go out and get stars thing, and he's also tried to do the let's build it up more in home. Your thoughts on Dallas this season, and how tough do you think it is for, you know, the franchise to be home again, watching some other teams in the Super Bowl, and that clock just continuing to grow larger and larger since their last appearance?
Yeah, it's amazing how long it's been now. It's going to be hard, but it was one of those weird years. I think what makes it harder, it was anybody's Super Bowl. I mean, I don't think anybody really had a great idea of who the matchup was going to be. I think in years prior, we always had a pretty good idea of who was going to make it through. I mean, you lose your number one seeds, you know, divisional weekend, both of them. You know, there was a potential to be a 6-4 Super Bowl, and I don't know if it's ever been, you know, that far down the rankings where a 6 was playing a 4 in the Super Bowl. But if San Francisco would have pulled off that victory, you know, that's what you would have had. And that's the way the season was. I mean, there were times during the course of the season where it looked like it was going to be the Bills, and then it looked like it was going to be the Chiefs, then it was the Rams early on, then it was the Buccaneers. You know, the Cowboys would pop, you know, from time to time. But you never really had a team that really kind of solidified itself all the way through the year and got on that really great run. So, you know, San Francisco seemed to be that team at the end of the year, having to win those games to get into the playoffs. And you just thought they were going to carry it all the way to the Super Bowl. But this is going to be a tough one for Dallas, because this was a year where there really was nobody that had run away with everything during the course of the season. So what you really needed to do was come in and play 1 month of really good football. And they were not able to do that. And, you know, that's going to be the biggest disappointment for them. I did not like all the Mike McCarthy needs to leave, needs to be fired. You know, it's poor execution at the end of the game. And, you know, I listened to everything that they said about that 14 seconds, and they had practiced it. They felt very comfortable in that time frame. And it's just a situation where all of a sudden, you know, the middle of the field is wide open, and Dak carries it a little bit too far down the field. You've got a situation where the umpire is not, you know, trailing the play properly. So you had some officiating mechanics, you had some execution mechanics that weren't perfect. And when you've only got 14 seconds left and you don't have a timeout, you have to be perfect. And that would have been my one thing. Dallas did not play perfect football that day. So to think that you were going to execute with everything on the line in a perfect manner, that just wasn't the day that was going to happen. So, yeah, I would have liked to have seen Dak, you know, get down to the ground, you know, about 5 yards earlier. It's not going to make or break. That 5 yards is not going to be the difference maker. The biggest thing was the clock, and that's something that he's going to learn from and grow from and be better at moving forward.
Darrell, we want to be a part of whatever you guys have coming up. We're getting the emails from the USFL, from the media outlets, so thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Always great to have you on the show, and good luck going forward.
Thank you so much. Great catching up with you guys.
You too.
Always Darryl, good to talk to you, David.
Yes, sir. You too, Darrell. Darrell Johnston, USFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations. Cowboys great. One of the most popular Cowboys players ever.
Yeah. I think if you asked people from my era, Cowboys fans from my era, to list their favorite players, I think you might have gotten like maybe a 33% clip of Moose.
I think it'd probably be more.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's triplets, obviously. That's mm-hmm. three of the five. Mm-hmm. And then it's like a rotation of, you mentioned Moose, you mentioned Novacek,
mm-hmm.
you mentioned like Russell Maryland or, you know, somebody kind of a Dion.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but they were the Rams. They had all the stars. But yeah, Darryl's definitely like a top five across the board on average, I would think, name that probably pops up on people's list.
Yeah,
sure.
he's no question, and also just an unbelievable guy. And he's been in these ventures where they've gotten close and something. Again, he mentioned Vince McMahon, XFL, yeah. COVID, and then also mentioned the business part of it. And
Vince is worth now more than he's ever been worth.